been good to be here tonight and being able to sing together. I really want to thank Nathan and Sarah for coming up and joining us. We're in for a treat, not just tonight, but over the next few nights. Nathan, by way of introduction, was raised in Pueblo, Colorado, and him and I both went through Fried Hardeman together ever since 2013. We did our undergrad together and we did our graduate work, and even when way back then, it seems like forever ago to us, when we were doing undergrad, as many of several of you know, he would travel up to Cedar Hill every Sunday, I believe, and would be there the entire day and then travel back. And I remember I wasn't preaching at the time, and I thought that was a little crazy. But there was just something about the family up there that he really loved, and I know we got a lot of really good experience, and I know some of those connections have lasted over the years. As of now, he preaches in Columbus, Georgia, at the Rose Hill Church of Christ, and doing a really great work down there. So we're really thankful to be able to steal them for a few nights. They say, I heard not too long ago, that you become like the five people that you spend the most time with, or that you talk the most with. And Nathan would be one of those five for me, and I aspire to be like him, although he's several years younger than me. That's what we'd like to tease about. I look up to him in many ways as an example of faith, as a Christian, and we're really blessed to be listen to him tonight. The topic for the next few nights is the way of the cross. So Nathan, preach the word.
Well, thanks, old man. it's so good to be with you tonight, and truthfully, I have to say that it will have been worth it to be here with you tonight for nothing less than to have sung with you tonight, and I'm looking forward now. I can't wait for me to be done with this lesson so we can sing some more, because it was so beautiful to be able to worship God with you. I do have to say thank you to, there's a little group of people right over here from Cedar Hill, and Jeff said it was a little crazy of me to go up there and preach when I was at Freed. It was way crazier for them to let me. And so I just want to say thank you to them for, would you believe, I think it was about 2.5 years, or maybe 3, I don't know, something like that. And I cannot recall of one bad thing they said about anything that I did the entire time, and I am sure. In fact, regrettably, I have access to like a couple, 2 or 3 audio sermons of mine, and I know what they were going through, okay? So I just want to say thank you to them for the opportunity and the experience, and just for their encouragement. I also want to say how appreciative we are of each of you for being here tonight and for allowing Sarah and I to be here tonight. Jeff and Amber both are special people to us, and we just think the world of them, and we're grateful for the opportunity to spend this week with you. Each night of our gospel meeting, we're going to be talking about the book of Philippians, but we're going to come to the book of Philippians sort of the long way around, and I hope that you'll understand what I mean by that in just a minute. To sort of frame up our discussion, I want to say that we use the term gospel meeting, and you know, I don't know when that phrase was first or that description was first coined, but ideally, you know, looking back into what people are trying to accomplish with a gospel meeting and all of this, and a lot of it used to be, and maybe still is, it's about reaching out to people and evangelizing, if you want to use that term, and going and spreading and saying, hey, come to our church building, we're going to have a speaker, you know, come listen, all that, and that's fantastic. And then at the same time, I realized that probably the majority of you are Christians, and you were at church this morning, and you're going to be at church next week, you know, and all of that kind of thing. And so as I think about that, as I'm preparing for this week's worth of message, I was thinking, I want to be able to say something that is valuable both to someone who has never even heard of Christianity hardly, as well as somebody that has been going to church for their whole life. That's really my goal. And I want to tell you one other thing about Cedar Hill. I want to tell you that when I was there, I can remember, and I see Adam over here, but I can remember Mr. Willie Carter. Many of you, you know Willie, and knew Willie. And he would always pray before I would do my Bible class. And he would always pray that God would help me to say the most needed things. Everybody at CRL probably can remember him saying that every single time. Just help Nathan to say the most needed things to us. And that's my goal today, is that we would be able to focus on what really matters. And what really matters when it comes down to it, the whole Christian life is built around this one concept of following Jesus. Yeah. You know, Jesus says, if anybody is going to be my disciple, he must pick up his cross, deny himself daily, follow me. The call of Jesus to every person that he encountered was always, follow me, follow me, follow me. Really, our goal in life is to spend our life following Jesus, going down the path that he sets before us. And the title of our series is The Way of the Cross. Because what we find when we follow Jesus is we're following a Savior that went to the cross. And even more than that, we're following a Savior who calls us, like I just quoted to you, he calls us to pick up our cross and follow him. And we'll talk more about what that means. But when we follow Jesus, we're following Jesus in the way of the cross. In 1 Corinthians 1, Paul starts out in verse 18 by saying, the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, what Paul does is he looks at three different perspectives on the word of the cross, on the way of the cross, on the life and teaching of Jesus. He says there's three different perspectives, three different types of people that are looking out at Jesus in his day. And those three perspectives are represented in about verse 22 through 24. Paul says there's the Jewish perspective. Jews demand signs. And then he says there's the Greek perspective. Greeks seek wisdom. But the third perspective, we preach Christ crucified. We preach Christ crucified. He says the word of the cross, the message of the gospel, it is a stumbling block to the Jew, foolishness to the Greek. But to us, it's the wisdom of God and the power of God. So he says there's these three different perspectives back then on the cross. There was a Greek perspective, there was a Jewish perspective, there was a Christian perspective. And what I want to try to do all week long with you is to stop and think about the fact that the Greek perspective, that perspective really corresponds in many ways to what we might call the secular perspective today. The perspective that is detached from faith in Christ, detached from perhaps even religion in general, it is corresponding to this, you know, basically our culture in many ways today. Something about the message of Jesus and the life of Jesus was foolishness to the Greeks in Paul's day. And something about the gospel message is foolishness, folly, to the secular world today too, right? The message of Jesus is laughable to the world. Maybe you're here tonight, you're thinking, yeah, I kind of agree. I think the message of Jesus, I don't get it, you know? I just don't really think it matters that much, you know? We'll talk about that. But from our secular world's perspective, the message of Jesus does seem like an absurdity. Follow Jesus in the way of the cross? No, thank you. And then we also have that Jewish perspective, but it really corresponds to what we might call the religious perspective on Jesus. And I'm going to try to help us distinguish between viewing Jesus from the religious perspective versus from the Christian perspective. And I want to kind of flesh out what I mean by that as we go. Each night, what we're going to do is we're going to look at some aspect, and Paul's message to the Philippians is going to kind of guide our attention and our thoughts. But each night I want to look at the secular perspective on a particular aspect of our faith, a particular aspect of life even, the religious view of that aspect of life or faith, and then look at the distinctly, uniquely Christian view. And as we go, my prayer is that if you're a Christian, you'll be encouraged to examine yourself and realize, and I'm going to do my best to do this as well, to realize that we all come to our relationship with God with certain glasses on. And a lot of times we're tempted to view Jesus through the secular lens, even though we're claiming to be Christians, even though maybe we're even, you know, we're striving for it. But there are many times in life where we're tempted to put on the secular perspective of Jesus, because sometimes the message of Christianity, the message of the Bible, it just seems absurd to us. And we think, I think I know a better way to go in this situation. And really all of us that are Christians have to admit there's been a time in our life where we've said, I think I know better in this case, you know. I think I like to look at it through my glasses, or through the secular perspective. But then we also have to admit that there are times when we put on this religious mindset. We've got this religious, these religious glasses on. And we come to Jesus, and Paul says that the message of the cross is a stumbling block to the Jews. And the word for stumbling block in Greek corresponds very closely to the English word scandal or scandalous. The message of the cross is deeply offensive to even religious people. The most religious people in Paul's day, and most closely associated with Christianity, the Jewish people, the Messiah came to them, and many of them found that Jesus was a reason to be offended. He was a reason to be uncomfortable, and they said, we don't want anything to do with the real Jesus. We'd rather have this picture of what Jesus, the Messiah, ought to look like that we have concocted, and we've parsed together different scriptures, and we've built this, you know, powerful king and ruler. We want that guy, not the real Jesus. And my goal tonight and every night is to help us ask the question, the religious perspective. Are there times when we look at Jesus and we see the Jesus we want to see rather than the real Jesus? That's a challenge for us. So we see we got our work cut out for us as Christians. We have to say, okay, what's my perspective here? Is it the Christian view? Is it the religious view or the secular view? At the same time, if you're not a Christian and you're here tonight, I want to help us together looking at the scriptures and considering the different perspectives on Jesus for us to talk about how maybe the secular view of Jesus doesn't necessarily hold up. The religious view of Jesus certainly doesn't hold up, but maybe the uniquely Christian view of Jesus not just makes sense, but also gives life the most meaning. And that's what we want, right? We want to live a life that matters. We want to live a life of purpose. There's a reason that the book Purpose-Driven Life has sold, I don't know how many million copies, right? You want to buy that book just from the title alone. I want a purpose in life, right? I want life to matter. And what we want to find as we study scripture this week is that Jesus introduces life to Jesus says in John 10, not to get ahead of myself for like Wednesday's lesson, but Jesus says, I came that they might have life and have it abundantly, have it to the full. And that's what we all want, and that's what we're looking at scripture tonight for. We're meeting Paul as he's writing the book of Philippians. He's chained to probably a Roman guard in a Roman prison. And as he's there and he's evangelizing to the Roman guard that is around him, and he's talking to other people, but he's in horrific conditions. I don't have to go through all the details of how bad ancient prisons were. There was certainly, you know, they weren't watching HBO or anything like that. They were in dark, unsanitary, lack of food, probably being physically beaten at times, and all these different things that were going on. Paul is enduring a whole lot of suffering. And we've said that Jesus, to follow Jesus, is to follow Jesus in the way of the cross. And tonight we're talking about the way of the cross is the way of suffering. And if you are not a Christian and you're here tonight, you're probably thinking, you're like that guy that said, come invest in my, you know, I've got this mutual fund or something, and it's got a negative 20% return every month. Where do you sign up, you know? The way of the cross is the way of suffering? Count me out on that, you know? I don't want anything to do with that. Well, let's talk about the secular view of suffering. I want to tell you about an article that I read piece of research, really, by clinical psychologist Lisa Firestone. She wrote this article, and she was looking out at the prescription painkiller addiction pandemic, we've been using that word a lot, epidemic, that's going on in our country and in our world. And she was looking out and she was seeing all of these horrific statistics about how the reality is that the number of deaths related to prescription painkillers has more than tripled in like the last decade or two. Now, she says, and I want to read you this because I think this is very important to make this clear tonight. She says in her article, obviously, people in severe pain should be medicated appropriately and have access to any needed prescriptions, okay? So she's not saying medicine is the enemy and medicine's bad, anything like that at all. But then she makes this statement and then asks this question. She says, but prescriptions are so high in America today because Americans are setting their pain threshold at an all-time low. So she says, in decades past, people would get prescription painkillers when their pain reached a certain level. They had this sort of ability to endure it and bear it in this level, but when their pain hit this level, then they received a prescription and they got their prescription medication and all of that. And she says, what we're finding is that as Americans, and this speaks, I think, to more than just America, but as Americans, that pain threshold is being lowered and lowered and lowered. And so pretty soon we're looking to these prescriptions to solve even minor or mild symptoms that we know, okay, I need a prescription for this, I can take it, and you know. And we find that there's this big prescription painkiller epidemic in our society. Again, to reiterate, if you take prescription painkillers, I'm not coming at you at all. She's saying, hey, you're going through something, you need it. But we do want to listen to the question that she asked, because she's looking at this statistic and saying, hey, triple the number of deaths are occurring because of our continued use of the kind of quantity of prescription painkillers. And a lot of her data was coming from even the U.S. government has been trying to work on this. But she asked this question. Is our aversion to pain killing us? Is our aversion to pain killing us? From the secular perspective, suffering is something to be avoided at all costs. Suffering is something that, and just hear me out, I don't particularly like suffering. I'm not looking to go seek it out. But from the secular perspective, and we wear these glasses all the time, suffering is something that we want to avoid and even eradicate. If you think about all of the advancements in our world, so many of our advancements are centered around this reality of how can I do something easier? How can I feel less pain? How can I find more enjoyment and pleasure or satisfaction, whatever it is? So much of our technology, our medicine, even our attempts to work on our government and economic policies and all of that, so much of it centers on trying to eradicate any sense of suffering in our lives. I am a big fan of cars. I'm a big fan of medicine. I'm a big fan of having a government that, you know, we want a government that treats us fairly, that we can come and worship here tonight and all this stuff. I'm big fans of all that. But the thing is, the more that we work to eradicate suffering in our world, the more we find we cannot eradicate suffering in our world. In fact, our quest to end suffering in some ways compounds the problem. There are a lot of times where, kind of like what Lisa Firestone was talking about, even about the medication, but there are a lot of times in your life and my life when we're trying to sidestep some perceived discomfort and we end up making our problem even worse. Not always. Sometimes we just trade one problem for another, but a lot of times, let's use conflict as an example. You ever had somebody that, maybe it was at work, whatever the case might be, you had a conflict with somebody and you knew, I really should say something to this person about this, you know, this wasn't right, or we need to work through this. But you decided, you convinced yourself, I really don't want to have this conversation. So you pushed it off another day, and you pushed it off another day, sidestepping the perceived suffering that this conversation would be, right? And before long, either you're just, every night you're going to bed with the weight of this conflict that is unresolved, and this is way worse than having the conversation. Or one day he or she says something and it all comes out and there's an explosion, and what happens because of that is worse than if you would have had that conversation. And yet we find ourselves on this quest to avoid suffering. And so we look at the secular point of view and we say, I don't like suffering. But suffering cannot be avoided completely, at least. Suffering is a reality, an inevitable reality of life. So then, we meet Mr. Religious Person. He comes onto the scene. And, you know, I should button the top button here. Mr. Religious Person comes onto the scene. And he says, you secular people, don't you understand? Suffering, it's a reality of life, and you just have to accept it. You say suffering's got to be avoided. No, suffering, you just got to accept it, bear it, you know, grit your teeth, white knuckle it, get through this. And by the way, Mr. Religious Person, typically, from his ivory tower, he looks down, and what he says is, he tells us, by the way, when suffering comes, you've got to endure it no matter what, you know, just bear it, it'll be over before you know it, tough it out, and don't you dare think about asking God why this is happening to you, right? Don't you just trust God, endure it, and it'll all be good in the end. And by the way, don't you know that if God's watching you, and if you don't handle this just right, this suffering that you're going through, you're probably not going to make it in the end. You know, you're not going to get to heaven. So you better just accept it. Don't ask any questions. Just get on with life. And, you know, you can handle this. Pretty soon you'll be through it. Many problems with that. The first one is, Mr. Religious Person never read any of the Psalms. Even Jesus on the cross. I don't know where we got this idea that we cannot ask God why when bad things happen. Even when Jesus was on the cross, he quotes from a Psalm. Anybody remember what he says? My God, what's the next word?
Why
have you forsaken me? Even Jesus on the cross looks up at God and asks the question, why? But Mr. Religious Person says, hey, you got this. Just tough it out. Don't ask any questions. And pretty soon, and we have all been given this advice in life, haven't we? I mean, we've been given this advice from the time we were even children when bad things would happen. You just got to tough it out. Yeah. It is what it is. Anybody ever heard that one thrown around? Yeah, we've all thrown that around, right? It is what it is. It'll be over before you know it. You know, all these different sayings that we have about the reality of suffering, you just got to accept it, put it on your shoulders and bear it, and pretty soon it'll be okay. So many things I like to say, but Mr. Religious Person tends to be Job's friends in the book of Job. Tends to come along and he pats you on the shoulder and he says, you just got to endure this and accept it. You know, you basically, what Job's friends say is, you deserve this, right? Something that you did made this happen to you. Everything happens for a reason, and God has caused this suffering to come upon you, and it's probably because you've been doing something you shouldn't be doing. No, I haven't been. Look at my life. I haven't been doing anything exceedingly wicked. You know, I'm no more wicked than my neighbor, and yet this huge, horrific thing has happened to me. And they say, well, I don't know. Maybe somebody in your life, maybe you're hanging around the wrong crowd, maybe in private, you know, but maybe you might need to do some soul searching, because it's probably, when you get down to it, you better ask God for forgiveness, and maybe he could take this thing away from you, you know? And you say, that's so unhelpful to me in this situation, right? And Job, we all feel for Job, because none of us have suffered like Job, but everybody has probably had a friend like Job's friends that say, you got to endure it. It might be your fault. Get over it. When the disciples asked Jesus in John 9, there was a blind man, and they asked the question, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus, you know, the emoji, the face palm emoji, if we were reading it and, you know, we had emojis in our Bible, I think Jesus did that one. He says, neither this man nor his parents sinned. So he's not blind because of something bad that he did as an individual. We live in a broken world. A fallen world is the way the Bible describes it. We live in a world where our collective sin has created a real bad environment. he wasn't born blind because of something he did personally. So now we look at it and we say, okay, suffering can't be avoided, as opposed to the secular view, but at the same time, looking at the religious view, we also have to say that suffering really can't just be accepted and, you know, put on our shoulders and endured. Because eventually we're going to meet a suffering that breaks us. Eventually we're going to meet a suffering that we don't know how to process, how to handle. And no matter how much the religious person will say, if you'll just, you know, if you just say your prayer at night, get up, get on with it, then you'll get over it. Eventually, even Mr. Religious Person is going to meet a suffering so severe that that advice is not going to hold up for him, not going to be able to just bear it. What is the Christian view of suffering that happens in our lives? Boy, I don't have the time, right? There's so much I'd like to say, but I want to focus on one particular aspect. Not looking to talk about all kinds of, we could study the whole book of Job, we could look at all these different passages. I want to talk about Paul in a prison cell. Paul in a prison cell suffering, and he's writing a message to the Philippians. The one thing he doesn't say is, just tough it out. He doesn't say, try to avoid suffering at all costs. What he says is, and I'm going to read in verse 18. I'm just going to read four words from you for Paul. Yes, I will rejoice. How is it possible for Paul in a prison cell, suffering greatly? This guy's been beaten and stoned and mobbed and all the shipwreck, all these sufferings he's been through. How can he say, yes, I will rejoice? He goes on and he says in verse 21, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. What has given Paul such a joy that he can say to the church that he's writing to, even in this prison cell, for me to live is Jesus, to die is gain, because I get to go, and the next verse he says, I'm going to get to go and be at home with the Lord. He says, for me to live is Christ. How can he have that kind of joy? Well, our fourth lesson this week will be the way of the cross is the way of true joy. So we're not going to get all the way there. However, we do want to look at this passage and realize that from the Christian perspective, suffering is not something just to be accepted. It's certainly not something that can be avoided. But that Jesus transforms even the bad sufferings that come into our life and makes them an opportunity for us to show the worth of Jesus to the world. Now, there's a lot in there, but I want to read for you Philippians 1, verse 12. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has happened really, or sorry, what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. It's become known throughout the whole Imperial Guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Paul, in the midst of all of his suffering and heartbreak, he says, when suffering comes into my life through Jesus and the power of the gospel, I get to show people knowing Jesus is worth all of this and more. Knowing Jesus is worth all of this and more. He says, I want to exalt the fact that Jesus, not me putting it on my shoulder and enduring it, not me skirting around it, Jesus is worth so much more than I can even articulate, that he has a peace, a love, a joy, a strength deeper than my deepest wound, stronger than the strongest wave of suffering that could come upon me, more lasting than the lasting, most lasting condition this world, you know, could plague me with. That the love of Jesus is such a sustaining force in my life that there is not a single thing in this world that could possibly cause me to say there's a contest between would it be better to not know Jesus and not be going through this than to know Jesus and to be going through this. Paul's going to say to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians, he's going to say that right now we're in a light momentary affliction. He says this, that we're going through the sufferings of this life, he says it pales in comparison to the weight of glory that is to be revealed to us. He says, when I go through suffering, I have an opportunity to do something with suffering that can't be done if it is simply accepted or avoided. And I want to tell you a story, and I know I want to not go too long here, but I want to tell you a story here. There was a woman who had an incurable disease. She suffered every day. My guess is there may be somebody in this room that has an incurable disease and is going through a great deal of suffering, or you at least are going through a lot. She was getting up there in years, and from the human perspective, she wasn't able to do very much anymore. She could hardly, leave the house. She was pretty much homebound. She had to have somebody bring her the groceries. She had to have somebody mow the lawn. She had to have somebody do all these different things. She was, however, able to sit outside. And she sat outside. And she went through her pain, and she went through, people would take her doctor, all these things would happen. But a woman came and moved into the house next to her. And the woman came and lived in this house next to her, and she got to know her a little bit. She saw, and every time she talked to this older woman that was going through all of this, this woman just kept talking about how worth it all of life is because she has met a man named Jesus. She just kept talking about the peace that Jesus gives, even in the midst of hardships. She kept talking about the love that was sustaining, the joy that she has in her heart, even though her body is aching, her spirit is satisfied because of who Jesus is and the fact that they're walking hand in hand. She just kept saying these things to this woman. Finally, this woman, she has a child. She decides, you know what, I need to do something to make my child's life better. This woman passes away. And as years go by, she decides, this woman had something that I don't have. I'm going to take my son to church. So she starts bringing him to church. Eventually, her son falls in love with the same Jesus that this woman did that lived next door. And this son went over and became a missionary in India and converted who knows how many people, wrote books, wrote articles, went and preached all over the place. And the story traces all the way back to a woman with an incurable disease who used her suffering as an opportunity to introduce someone to the worth of Jesus Christ. This man, this evangelist, if you want to call him that, as he goes on and he's preaching and teaching and he's recounting, he's looking back to this woman. And he's thinking, there's no way that she knew. There's no way she could have known what her testimony, the testimony of her life, meant. There's no way she knew the meaning, the depth of value that was present in her life, not just because God reached me through her, but because God has reached all hundreds of people through this one woman that would never know about it. Only the Christian view of suffering as an opportunity for us to show others the worth of Jesus and to say, have you met, we sang some beautiful song, have you met Jesus, my Lord? Only the Christian view provides suffering with any kind of meaning. Suffering, the Bible never says that, suffering befalls this individual for this reason, and if anybody tells you you're going through this for that reason, don't listen to them at all. But the Bible does reveal to us that suffering as part of our broken world, it testifies to the fact that we have problems. We're distant from God. And when Christians bear suffering and point to Jesus, other people take notice and say, where have you found something that can sustain you even through the deepest hurts of life? I want to read you a poem as we close tonight. a poem you probably heard before. You are writing a gospel, a chapter each day, by the deeds that you do and the words that you say. Men read what you write, whether faithful or true. Just what is the gospel according to you? Our life is an opportunity to write a gospel, to write good news, to show, to spread, to point others to the good news of Jesus Christ. And if you're here tonight and you're ready to respond to the good news of Jesus, you're ready to say, I want to follow him. I know that the way of the cross is the way of suffering. There's going to be pain along the way, but only Jesus makes sense of the suffering in this world by infusing it with meaning, because he is more powerful than even the worst thing that could befall me. We want to offer you an invitation. You're welcome to come forward tonight. You're welcome to declare before all of these people that you're ready to follow Jesus, to be immersed into Christ, to have your sins washed away. We want that for you tonight. But if you don't tonight, if you're here, you're not a Christian, and you say, I'm not there yet, Nathan, let me just ask you to do one thing. Come back tonight and see us again. Let's keep talking and let's keep looking at these three perspectives of Jesus. And let's see if Jesus can help make most sense of our life and provide us with a life most meaningful. Would you come and stand and sing?